I read recently about a rabbi who lives in the suburbs of Detroit, who has decided to move he and his family from the suburbs of Detroit into the inner city, to a section not very far from downtown in an old part of the city. And he and his family are purchasing a great big home. And into this home, they're going to invite other Jewish families to come and live with them, both secular and religious Jews. He wants to start what is called in Hebrew a kapad. A kapad is a house of hospitality for Jewish people in which several families will live together under the same roof. And the reason that he wants to do this, this rabbi, is he wants Jewish families to move back into the center of Detroit to be part of the renewing of the city. Isn't that interesting? I heard a story about 3 weeks earlier about a nonprofit organization that has started a contest. And their contest is that they have invited writers to submit a piece of their writing, and they're going to identify a handful of winners of this contest. A person who wins the writing contest will be given a home in urban Detroit that will be theirs. If they live in that home for 1 year as a good citizen of the community, they'll be given a deed to the home and it will be theirs forever. The reason this nonprofit organization has started this contest is because they want to invite writers who live in Detroit to be part of the renewal of the city. Interesting. Renewal is on a lot of people's minds these days. Renewal is a beautiful, beautiful word. In fact, if I had to pick one word that captures and summarizes the effect and the intention of the gospel of Jesus, what it is that God wants to do in us and in the world as a result of the death and the resurrection of Jesus, if I had to choose one word, the one word that I would choose would be renewal. It's on a lot of people's minds these days. There are people who want renewal in Washington, D.C. And there are people who want renewal in our state. And I think every one of us here this morning longs for renewal in our community. This morning, we're coming to the last of this series of messages that we've called the Signposts of Renewal. Every Sunday, we've looked at a different practice that we do that is a cooperating with God's work of renewal in our lives and in the world. And this morning, we come to the last, but in many ways, the first. The final signpost that we're considering today is the signpost of worship. And here's the question that I would like to ask you this morning. Is it possible that our worship and the worship of other Christians in our community, is it possible that our worship can be a vital part of the renewing that God wills to do in Gratiot County and in Central Michigan? I have a feeling that if the Apostle Paul were sitting here with us this morning, he would be bubbling over at the very thought of the question. My hunch is that out of deep, deep, deep joy and maybe a good belly laugh or two, the Apostle Paul would announce, "You better believe it is." The worship of the people of God is at the heart of the renewal of a community. I believe that because Paul, in effect, said it in the text that we just read a moment ago. Listen to it again. "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship." Understand, it was an extraordinary, and I mean gargantuan, challenge that the Apostle Paul and the earliest churches faced. When Paul wrote this letter to the Romans, he was writing to a handful of house churches that were scattered throughout the enormous city of Rome, the heart of the Roman Empire, this little tiny fringe movement of people that met together in a handful of house churches, perhaps 20 or 30 people gathering together week after week after week to sing songs like we've done this morning, and to listen to the reading of Scripture like we've done this morning, and to listen to instruction that comes out of the Word, and then to respond with gratitude and the breaking of bread, and then to go back into their communities to live as salt and light in the world. It was a gargantuan task that the church was facing to whom the Apostle Paul was writing on this particular day. They were this tiniest of all fringe movements within the Roman Empire, and the force of that which was working against them was simply extraordinary. And in this possibly the most, I don't want to say that, in these extraordinarily important words that Paul writes in this letter, he tells the church their task as the people of God is to present their whole bodies to God. And in presenting their whole bodies to God as a living sacrifice, this is their reasonable worship. Paul is using the language of the Old Testament sacrificial system as he announces this to the church. This is the language that they would have recognized that was used of the bulls and the rams and the sheep that were offered to God centuries previous. Only now Paul is announcing to the church, we don't present bulls and rams and sheep any longer. We present ourselves, our whole bodies to God. This is our worship. I can't help but wonder, you know, if there weren't some people in the churches when they read this letter, heard this letter read for the first time, if they didn't kind of slide their, you know, their pinky over to the edge and say, can I give everything but my pinky? Or maybe, you know, all but my ears. I really don't want the Lord to have my ears. Paul is announcing to the church that their appropriate response to what God has done in Jesus is to present their whole bodies, all of them, as a living sacrifice to God. And this is their reasonable worship. Now, here's what we need to know about the church to whom Paul was writing. This was a church that faced extraordinary temptation to conform to their world. The river conformity was running with tremendous power through the Roman Empire at the time of the writing of this letter. It was a river that carried people along with extraordinary force. People called to conform to its power constantly. There was at least two tributaries of the conformity river that Paul drew the attention of this church to through this letter. One of them was, believe it or not, Paul warned them about religious conformity. Paul had warned the church over and over through this letter about the straitjacket of religion. You see, there were some people in the church in Rome, some Jewish Christians, who were sort of happy that Gentile Christians had become part of the movement, but they wanted the Gentile Christians to look like Jews. And so they had said, if a Gentile receives Jesus into their heart and becomes a part of the church, they need to start looking a little bit more Jewish. The men need to be circumcised and they need to dress like Jewish people and they need to follow the Jewish holidays and the Jewish practices. And through this letter, Paul has warned the church, no. Don't conform even to religious conformity. If it's a straitjacket, don't wear it. Be who you are. But there was a second powerful tributary of conformity that was washing through the Roman world, and it was conformity to, I don't know how to say this, just conformity to the world. It was powerful. Christians were profoundly tempted to line up and look like everybody else. Did you know that in the Roman world, at the time that Paul was writing this letter, an extraordinary number of people were enslaved? In the Roman world, if you were the child of a slave, you had the terrible luck of being destined for slavery yourself. And if you couldn't pay your bills, if you just couldn't pay your bills, there was a terrible likelihood that you were going to be sold off into slavery. You and then your children and then your children's children. It was a horrific system. And Christians in the first century were tempted to just go along, not say anything, just wink and nod, you know, it's just the way the world is, and conform to the way that the world was, to live in a world in which extraordinary masses of poverty are wrecking the lives of people, and just live as though it is what it is. You know, at the time the Apostle Paul was writing, there was enormous pressure to conform to the spiritual, I'm sorry, to the sexual impulses of the time. You could say the word of the day was, if it feels good, do it. There were actually temples throughout the Roman Empire in which prostitution was practiced as part of the rituals of the people who went to those temples. They called them fertility cults. And so people would go into the temples and they would practice prostitutions. People would use their bodies and throw them away like rag dolls, treating their sexuality something beautiful, extraordinary, wonderful, as though it was a rag doll. This was going on in the world in which Paul wrote, and there was tremendous pressure on the church to conform to the way the world looks. Extraordinary pressure on the church of Paul's day to just look like everybody around us. And so Paul, as he writes this letter to the church, he reminds them, as an appropriate response to what God has done, present your whole bodies to God, holy and acceptable. This is your reasonable worship. He follows it with the words, don't be conformed to this world. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Well, my friend Mark Sipka, and your friend Mark Sipka, is a really, really, really funny guy. Mark Sipka is living in Southern California right now, following his vision to be a comedian. A number of months ago, might have been a couple of years ago, Mark and I had coffee together, and Mark was explaining to me the challenges that he faced. He said, as I go to Southern California, I realize that I'm going to be swimming against the stream, because in Southern California, to make it as a comedian, they say that you have to use the most horrific language. If you're not turning the air blue, you're not funny. He said, in Southern California, in that scene, if you're not using humor to demean other people, you're not using humor to put other people down, you're not funny. Mark said, I think I'm funny, and I think I have a gift. And my challenge is to go to the place where I want to go and to be myself. If you ever go to Oregon, you'll see that there's a little town on the Columbia River called the Dalles. And the Dalles is a place where there's a dam on the Columbia River. You can go down into this dam and you can look out these windows on the salmon ladders. And if you're there at the right time of year, you can see these salmon that are swimming upstream and going up these ladders, jumping from one rung to another. It is an absolutely incredible thing that you see. And this is the challenge that the Apostle Paul is presenting to the church. Can our worship form our lives in such a way that we can be part of the renewal that God wills to do in Gratiot County in central Michigan? And can we do it, and can we live in such a way that we don't conform to the patterns of this world? Powerful question. You know, the problem with the river conformity is that the river conformity is terribly, terribly, terribly violent to our soul. When we conform, to the straitjackets of religion, or when we conform to the patterns of our world, we do a tremendous violence to our soul, because there develops a break between the person that we are created in the image of God and the person that we are pretending to be. It is a tremendous violence to the soul. In Hebrew, the word for soul is a beautiful word, nefesh. In the Old Testament, in Hebrew, the word soul refers to the person that you really, really, really are. It's the person that you are that was created in the image of God. It is the person that you are being when you are not pretentious. It is the person that you are being that when you know that you are loved. It is the person that you are being when you are true to you, created in God's image. And the terrible problem with conformity is that when we conform, we do terrible violence to our soul. I want to make a true confession to you. I'm going to tell you one of my deep, dark secrets this morning. I love the TV show The West Wing. True confession. Those of you who don't know, The West Wing is a drama. Dawn and I are re-watching The West Wing on Netflix. We're now in season 6, or 7 of 8. We've been doing this for quite a long time. We love The West Wing. The West Wing is a story about a president, a Democratic president of the United States, and his staff who work along with him, and the daily challenges and busyness and craziness that goes along with being a president and the president's staff, speechwriters and a chief of staff and the various people who work in his innermost circle. One of the themes that the writers of The West Wing come back to again and again and again and again is this theme of violence to the soul. They don't call it that. But the characters of the show are frequently tempted to do and to say things that they don't really believe in order to gain political favor. And it's hard to watch. Hard to watch people that you feel like you've sort of developed a friendship or a kinship with, who are tempted to act in ways that are not true to who they are, And you see them again and again speaking and acting and living in ways that are not true to what they really believe and what they really value in order to get political favor. And it is one of those shows that I'm afraid that in this case, art imitates reality far too much. It is perhaps the greatest tragedy that can take place to our soul, not be true to who we were created to be. I think it starts very early. I think children, sometimes around the years that they go to middle school, they begin to learn that if you don't look a certain way, you're not going to be accepted. If you don't talk a certain way, you're not going to be accepted. If you don't belong to the right sports, you're not going to be accepted. And so at a fairly early age, young people, all of us, learned how to put on certain masks and ways of pretending, being something that we may not be, because the worst thing that can happen is to not be accepted. I think it happens in churches. I think it happens in synagogues. I think it happens in mosques. When people cannot ask their hard questions, or there isn't room for doubt, or there isn't room for people to just simply be who they are, and everyone is forced to live together in the straitjacket of religion, I think it happens all the time in our culture. I think it happens every day. I think we hear messages every day announcing what we're supposed to look like, sound like, be like. We call them commercials and advertisement. We hear thousands of them every week demanding that we live, look, act a certain direction. And as we do, as we line ourselves up with the power of conformity, as we jump into the river conformity and ride along with it, we do terrible, terrible, terrible violence to our soul. Which is why there is one word in Romans chapter 12 that is extraordinarily important. Paul said to the church in Rome, "I beseech you therefore, brethren and sistern, I beseech you therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God." This is the word, therefore. You see, what the word therefore does is the word therefore has you stop and look at what was said before the word therefore. And what Paul has done before the word therefore in Romans, all that he has done is to spend 11 chapters with the most expansive, extraordinary, and exceptional argument for grace. Romans chapter 1 through 11 is possibly the most brilliant writing that has ever been done about the importance, the power, the beauty of grace. And what Paul has done with the church in Rome and on behalf of the church in Rome is to remind them in 100 different ways that they are the people of God because God has called them by grace. God has chosen them by grace. God has empowered them by grace. And God has made them who they are by grace. Do you know what grace is? Grace is what happens when the source of love chooses another for no other reason than that he loves them. That's grace. Do you know what grace is? Grace is when a people have absolutely no reason to be able to claim to deserve to belong, and the source of all choosing says, "But you do." Grace is what happens when forgiveness is granted to people who cannot raise one pinky to claim that they deserve to be forgiven. Grace is what happens when people who don't deserve to be included are included. And in this letter, Paul has spent 11 chapters making the case for we, the church, those who entrust themselves to Jesus, are the people of grace. Just listen, friends, to some of the ways he does it. Oh, we all know this important verse. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We all know that verse. All have sinned. Isn't it true? Let's have every exception raise your hand right now. I didn't think so. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. But the next words, the very next words, "But all," says Paul, "are justified, made right by grace." This is the letter. Romans is the letter where Paul will say, God made him who knew no sin. May I paraphrase a little bit? God made Jesus, who didn't ever conform. God made Jesus, who knew no sin, who becomes sin. Let me paraphrase. God made Jesus, who never conformed, to take all of the consequences of our conformity upon himself, so that we, who are sinners, might be the righteousness of God. This is what Paul has said in Romans. In Romans, Paul has said, I'm persuaded there isn't anything in all of creation, not one cotton-picking thing, I might be paraphrasing a little bit, not one cotton-picking thing that can separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ. Throughout this whole letter, Paul has made the case over and over and over and over again for grace. We are God's people because we trust what God has done for us that we never could have done for ourselves. So we come back to the question, can our worship renew a community? Well, frankly, no, it can't. If by worship you mean we come together under a straitjacket and we make everybody look exactly alike, and we silence every question, and we demean every doubt, and we force everyone to look exactly alike, and we are the frozen chosen, no, it can't. If by worship we mean a group of people who come together because we've got it all together and we're right and everybody else is wrong, no, that's never going to renew a community. But if by worship you mean a group of people who come together to celebrate grace and to create an atmosphere in which there is grace and to create the playfulness that can take place where there is grace and to celebrate what God has done for us so that we might in fact act that way toward the world, then folks, I have to think the Apostle Paul is offering up one of those beautiful belly laughs right now. You better believe it. If the people of God will commit their bodies, their whole bodies, as a living sacrifice, surrendered to God's grace, then you better believe the power of renewal is at hand. Ken Robinson tells this story about his son. His son was asked to be part of the Christmas play back in Ken Robinson's native Great Britain. So his son was part of this Christmas play. He was to be one of the three wise men. So you remember the story. The three wise men were to show up at the manger of Jesus. Only two of these wise men got out of order. Number two and number three got out of order with one another. So the first wise man showed up at the manger and said, I brought the gift of gold to offer to the baby Jesus. The second one showed up and said, I brought the gift of myrrh to offer to the baby Jesus. The third one showed up and said, Frank sent this. I love that story. I love that story because that story describes what can happen when grace is present. You see, children understand grace better than adults do. Children understand it better than we do. Children understand that when grace is present, you can make mistakes, and you can take chances, and you can be creative, and you can be yourself. And the Apostle Paul, writing to the Romans, reminds them, we are that community. That's who we are. We gather together as a people who are brought together by the love of God in Jesus. That is the reason for our existence. That is the ground of why we are here. Paul reminds the church, we come together not as a group of Jews and a group of people who have to act like they're Jews. No. We come together as God's people who have been purchased by Jesus Christ. Paul reminds the church, the center of our story is that Jesus Christ took the weight of the world's sin upon himself and in resurrection was raised with such power and granted the gift of his Spirit to the church so that we might be a people who swim upstream. We don't conform. The problem with conformity is that conformity is surrendering to the power of ungrace that is at work in our world. Ungrace that says, you have to look like this, you must act like that, you must own these things if you're going to have the good life. And the beauty of grace is the grace says that right where you are today, right now, you are loved, you are called, you are chosen. And if our worship, friends, if our worship is the kind of worship where we have an atmosphere of grace because we know who has called us, and we worship with gratitude unending, extraordinary praise and gratitude because of what God has done and is doing in us. And if that worship makes us the kind of people who are united with one another through Jesus, united with all of our differences. And if that grace calls us together in worship and then sends us out into the world as salt and light, as people who live that grace in this community, then that grace is going to bring renewal in this community. You can count on it. Well, it's a great challenge that Paul gives to the church, to us, that he gives to us. I beseech you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your whole body, your whole bodies, yes, your pinky, yes, your ears, all of you. I beseech you, therefore, brothers, to present your whole bodies to God as a living sacrifice, surrendered to the grace of God in Jesus, not conformed to this world, but transformed by the renewing, there's that word, transformed by the renewing of your mind. Well, I want to open the altar this morning as we sing in response to Scripture and the message this morning. I just want to open the altar. If you would like to come to the altar this morning as an offering of yourself, your whole self, everything, all of you surrendered to the grace, the love, the goodness of God that we have met in Jesus, we're not going to have anybody come pray with you if you come to the altar this morning. You just come and kneel at the altar, and I just want to invite you to come. Surrender all of you, even your hair, absolutely all of you. If you need to pray with somebody, I want to invite you to just come and sit on the front pew, and one of our pastors or even ministers or Christ Care leaders or elders is going to come sit alongside of you and pray with you as we sing together. Friends, I beseech you, present your whole body, every part of you, a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable, not conformed, but transformed by the renewing of your mind.